And when they dug up the body, the commission wrote in its official report, even though the impression had long prevailed that Lewis died by his own hand, it seemed more probable he died by the hand of assassins. Mm. And that's what opened up this whole idea that...
Welcome to Talk with History. I am your host, Scott, here with my wife and historian, Jen.
Hello.
On this podcast, we give you insights to our history-inspired world travels, YouTube channel journey, and examine history through deeper conversations with the curious, the explorers, and the history lovers out there. Now, Jen, before we get into this episode and I do my little intro here, I do want to mention, if folks are listening to this for the first time, this is our 99th episode.
Yeah.
And so this is our 99th episode. So you're going to naturally, if you're listening, you're going to say, well, what are you guys doing for your 100th episode? Well, you guys are just going to have to subscribe and follow us to find out the guest, the very special guest
it's
that
big.
we have for our 100th episode. It's a truly legit celebrity.
And big.
And a big one, especially in history circles. So make sure that you tell your friends. And make sure you're following us either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen, because the 100th episode, I actually already finished editing it. So that one is scheduled as we are recording this. But this one will come out, and our 100th episode will have a very special guest that I think our listeners are almost guaranteed to enjoy. Today, we're setting sail. Well, technically, we're setting off on horseback. On a journey to explore the life and untimely demise of Meriwether Lewis, the intrepid co-captain of the Lewis and Clark expedition. You know him as the guy who explored the vast unknown of the American West alongside William Clark, but Lewis's story takes a dark turn after their triumphant return. In 1809, at the young age of 35, Lewis was found dead under mysterious circumstances. Was it a tragic case of suicide, or was there foul play that led to his demise? The evidence is murky, and the debate rages on. We'll be diving deep into the final days of Lewis's life, examining the clues and exploring the theories behind this historical whodunit. So saddle up, history detectives. Join me as we untangle the truth about the mysterious death of Meriwether Lewis. All right, Jen. Meriwether Lewis, Lewis and Clark.
I know, big name in American history.
Big names.
Like big name, first name, right? He's the beginning of the Lewis and Clark expedition. And really, when it comes down to it, Lewis is Jefferson's secretary when Jefferson buys the Louisiana Purchase.
You know how I remember that? Is the drunk history.
Oh my gosh.
There was a drunk history.
There is a drunk history about it.
And it wasn't about Meriwether Lewis or Jefferson, but it was about, who was that kind of newspaper or
calendar?
Calendar, James Calendar.
James Calendar, we made a video about him.
There was a drunk history about James Calendar, and they mentioned very briefly that Meriwether Lewis is the secretary for Jefferson at the time.
So they're close.
Yeah.
Right? They're both from the same area of Virginia. They've kind of run in the same circles, and they're close. And he's helped squash like the Whiskey Rebellion. He's part of the Virginia militia, and he's just a very trusted advisor to Jefferson. And he's kind of an outdoorsy guy. And so it's really Lewis who brings Clark on board, because Jefferson picks Lewis, and Lewis is like, who have I worked with before that I really liked? I liked Clark when we were in the military together.
Because they had just finished up the Louisiana Purchase.
Mm-hmm.
So Jefferson's, hey.
We need someone to go out and see what I bought.
You're outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
Go explore all that.
Yeah.
You know.
Go see what I bought.
Bajillion acres of land that I just bought.
And really, I have to give Lewis a lot of credit. And I love his first name. Meriwether is super cool. But he's the one who brings the people together. He's the one who kind of hires Sacagawea's husband, who's a French trader, trapper, who knows the area, but sees the knowledge of Sacagawea, sees her importance, and it's Clark who brings his enslaved man York with him, but it's Lewis who's very adamant that we are not going to treat enslaved like enslaved on this trip. Everyone's going to get a fair vote.
Oh, interesting.
Everyone is a member of this expedition. And it's Lewis who sets this precedence. And they very much, even when Sacagawea, they're very much involved in her life because she's pregnant at the time. They're a part of her delivery. They all help with her child as he's growing up. I mean, Clark will eventually take care of the child. And
well, and the expedition takes 2.5 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
So by the end of the expedition, I mean, her child is probably two years old.
Yeah. And they're, like I said, they're just very close. And it's Lewis who sets this whole precedence here. But people see Lewis's mental state. And sometimes he can be melancholy. Sometimes he can get a little forlorn, depressed. And
was this even during the expedition as well?
This is even during the expedition. And Jefferson had seen him do it sometimes as well. There is some family history for Lewis of his father having kind of a mental health deterioration. So there could be a family history of that. And that's not always hereditary, but it can be. So it's just, you have to acknowledge that.
Sure.
Also acknowledge that this expedition took so long. They doubled back a couple times. And in a way, as much as Meriwether Lewis is very vital to all the drawings and all the things they're bringing back, all the exhibits.
Yeah, the documentation.
The documentation. He's very good at all of that. They aren't quite getting the important thing they were supposed to get.
Yes.
Which is the waterway.
Yeah, they're right? Looking for a waterway from basically from east to west.
From east to west. And so maybe almost not Mississippi up. They're just looking for a waterway that could take you from Pacific, maybe down the Mississippi, maybe to Gulf. So basically you're not going completely around South America because at the time there's no Panama Canal.
Right.
And so you can tell that maybe he's in that. And I'm a historian. I'm just kind of giving an idea. I don't know. He's feeling less optimistic about that. And so then he's the pessimism that he's not hitting the thing that he was really supposed to discover. And that's becoming more realistic as the expedition goes on.
Yeah, I think it's something that the general public doesn't really think about when you're learning about the whole Lewis and Clark expedition, because we see it as through a fairly romantic mm-hmm, lens. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. What would it be like to be on the Lewis and Clark expedition, exploring this, you know, all this land and seeing Oregon for the first time and all the stuff mm-hmm. that you kind of, especially as someone from the West Coast,
sure,
learning about that, but you don't think about, well, what was their true mission, their yeah. mission? Like, yeah. what was their goal? And if their goal, like the one thing that they set out to accomplish, aside from just the general sure. nature of the expedition that they weren't able to, someone like Meriwether Lewis, that might have affected him.
Sure. So you can think he's almost in charge of this. Mm-hmm. He's worked for Jefferson. He knows how important this is for Jefferson. Jefferson hasn't just said, oh, and if you find a waterway, that would be great. He's probably, that's what you need to find.
Yeah.
I hope I bought this with a waterway.
It's a trade thing. Yeah.
But even when they come back, like you said, it took a couple years and they come back, they are very much treated as celebrities. This has made news. I mean, because they've seen things that never been seen before. They've discovered things that never been seen there by the English settlers. I know they're meeting American Indians out there. They've seen the stuff.
Yeah, and but French fur traders.
Yeah, trappers.
But this is like
for the general public.
Right.
No one's, and now it's American land, because before it was all French land. So kind of letting all the Americans know what's out there. So they are seen as celebrities. And because of that, after they return home, Lewis is rewarded 1,600 acres. And he is made the governor of the Louisiana Territory. So when you think Louisiana Purchase, Louisiana Territory, it's bigger than the state. It's like that area. And so the capital, quotes, is in St. Louis. And that's where he settles. So he
And remember, just for time frame here, I mean, this is the early 1800s. So the expedition was 1803 to 1806. And so they come home, great fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made the governor of the general Louisiana area. I don't know what they call it, territory.
So they call it the upper Louisiana territory.
Okay.
And so he's made governor in 1807. So he's gotten back, 1807, governor of this Louisiana territory. Now, what starts to happen is he's writing his journals. He wants to get his journals published. He's starting to establish roads. He's starting to establish laws, right? This is a former French territory. This is a very much American Indian territory. So he has to negotiate peace among all these quarreling Indian tribes. And he's trying to enforce these Indian treaties. And he's trying to protect Western Indian lands and encroachment, because Manifest Destiny is a big proponent now of this Lewis and Clark expedition, because Americans realize there's all this land and we want to go settle it.
And if I remember correctly, and I am not the historian here, but the American government kind of stoked that fire, right? It was part of the whole Manifest Destiny that said, hey, Manifest Destiny, partly to get population out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could kind of expand the American population, which would then expand everything else within America.
Yeah. And so he's fighting D.C., which Jefferson's no longer president after this. It's going to be Madison, who's very good friends with Jefferson. So it's not like Lewis still isn't. We're held in high esteem because he is, because Madison and Jefferson are basically the same person. And then you're going to have these people who want to come out and settle. You have the American Indians, you have treaties, and he's trying to negotiate all of this. And people in DC are wondering, why is this so difficult? Are you having a hard time? And historians have argued that he was a poor administrator because he was trying to handle all of this. And as he's handling all of this and bringing in different chiefs, he's paying for all of these logistics. Whether it is to travel in chiefs or bring people, he's paying for logistics of this. And so he's reaching back to D.C. to get reimbursed for these things. And D.C. is, well, you're not doing a very good job. And we don't believe that this is, that these are accurate receipts.
Oh.
And it's putting Lewis in a financial burden. And so this is why he's traveling to D.C.
Okay.
He's going to D.C. to basically be in person, make the argument, talk about these are the receipts for this, and this is the receipts for this, and this is what happened here. Now, his letters are not very quick and timely, and people equate that to his mental illness. That his melancholy, that all these things, that he wasn't quick to respond to the inquiries from D.C. And because of that, the mental illness, and that's also where people don't trust him. That's also why they feel like he's a poor administrator. No one knows for sure, but it could have been other medical reasons that are happening at the time.
So he does the expedition for a couple of years. Is kind of disappointed. I don't know. Did he write that in his journals? I mean, I don't remember. I don't remember. But obviously, they didn't accomplish the one primary mission.
Yeah,
accomplished a lot.
Yeah,
came back. I don't know if he volunteered, asked for, or was saddled with governorship. But it sounds like he, after spending a couple of years exploring the wilderness, that's quite a shift going from one to the other. Becomes governor of the upper Louisiana territory. Isn't doing a good job.
Mm-mm.
Is basically spending money that he doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get reimbursed for it. So he says, hey, I'm going to go make my case to D.C. I'm going to go talk to Madison, who's I already know because he's good buddies with Jefferson. I'm going to go to D.C., make my case, see if they can get them to reimburse me for all this stuff so that I can keep the wheel spinning over here in Upper Louisiana Territory.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the point. He's leaving St. Louis to travel to D.C. to make the argument about these receipts, to get reimbursed so he's not in financial ruin, to kind of defend his governorship. And he's fighting with the former Louisiana governor who's down in the lower Louisiana territory, their differences in governing, decides to travel from St. Louis to New Orleans, where he's going to get on a big ship, and then travel from New Orleans across the Gulf over to D.C. Okay. That's his plan.
So take the Mississippi down to basically the Gulf and ocean, yes. Go up around the coast.
And with him, he's bringing, I think it was like six big trunks of all of his journals to get published. So finally, that was, everybody wanted to see. What do these fish look like? What does this fauna look like?
It's been a couple years.
Yeah, right? And he's finally got them finished. He's going to bring them to D.C. as well. So it's very precious cargo. So when he hits Memphis, this is 1809. This is around the time when the British are starting to act up with impressments. This is going to lead us into the War of 1812. So he's getting a little nervous about going to New Orleans. He's getting nervous about putting his trunks on a ship and traveling around Hatteras, North Carolina.
Yeah, and if you've heard any of our past episodes, right? Like, that's very dangerous sailing out there sometimes.
Ships sink there.
Yeah.
Important documents can be lost forever, Aaron Burr. And so he gets nervous when he hits Memphis. And he's, I'm going to travel from Memphis. Because you're like, why doesn't he travel from St. Louis across? Why does he go down to Memphis? And then, so from Memphis, he goes, I'm going to go across to D.C. And I'm going to get...
So I'm going to go across Tennessee, kind of take that route over.
I'm going to get on the Natchez Trace, which is a trail that's easily traveled, and I'm going to go to D.C.
Gotcha.
So he hits Memphis. He gets malaria. He gets sick. And if we know anything about Memphis, mosquitoes, yellow fever, right? And he gets sick. Malaria can make you delirious. He's taking opium. Those are the kind of pills that you took to combat the fever that you get with malaria, and he has a suicide attempt, or that's what they claim. He was trying to jump off the side of the ship.
Yeah, he was probably just like super high or hallucinating.
So they stop him from doing that, and they're like, he had a suicide attempt. So these are the things that kind of back the case of this future suicide claim.
Right.
So he's there for a couple weeks. He gets a travel buddy, basically. His name is Neely. He's a Chickasaw Indian agent. He will bring his enslaved man with him. Lewis is traveling with a free black servant, Perna. He's not enslaved. He hasn't been paid in a while. So he's owed like $200. So he's traveling with Lewis still, but he hasn't been paid because Lewis doesn't have any money because it's all tied up in these receipts. Neely comes with him. They take two big trunks with him. Two goes with Lewis. Two goes with Neely on a wagon. And they start to travel from Memphis about 2 weeks later, after he gets better, to up the Natchez Trace up to Nashville. Because the Natchez Trace takes you from Natchez, Mississippi, to Nashville. And he hits Grinder Stand alone because two of the horses have run away. And Neely goes looking for those two horses, and he goes by himself. The two servants, the one enslaved man and the one free man of color, travel behind Lewis with the four trunks.
Okay. And Grinder Stand was like basically like an inn, like a place for the people to stop.
So Grinder Stand is a stand or an inn. They call it, stand is kind of a word for inn.
Oh, okay.
And it's located on the Natchez Trace. It was owned by the Grinders, so Robert Grinder and Priscilla Grinder. But there was no D in their name. So it's Grinner.
Oh, okay.
But the D was added for the stand, Grinder Stand, but they're Grinner.
Okay.
And so kind of a, when you're looking for their names in the archive, there's no D in their names.
Classic historian switcheroo.
Which is hard for historians. Because a lot of these names that we use here are misspelled or the spelling has changed. It was two rough log cabins. And this is the whole reason why we do this video, is we stopped at that location where they have recreated Grinder Stand along the trace. And there is Meriwether Lewis's grave. There were two cabins that kind of were adjoined at right angles. There was kind of a dog trot between them, so they weren't connected. And that's why when you hear Priscilla Grinder doesn't sleep in the same cabin as Meriwether Lewis that night because she's in the other one. Now, a dog trot between them is not a lot, right? And with wood planks, there's not a lot. You can hear, right? So just bear in mind, she's
and that's she's why, aware. That's why she's able to hear what happens. Yes.
Even though she's going to give three separate accounts over the years of what happened that night.
Like three different ones?
Three different ones.
Oh, interesting.
Even though she really is the only witness besides the two men who are traveling with them, the two men of color, which we'll talk about. So Meriwether Lewis gets there on the night of October 10th, 1809. He gets there about 6 o'clock and he asks for a room and she gives him the one whole cabin. And then she with her children are in another room. Now, where's Robert? Where's her husband? There's a family folklore from the Grinder family that Robert caught Priscilla and Lewis in bed together.
Oh, really?
And Robert will be the one to shoot Lewis. And then he runs away to Texas. And that really did happen right after Meriwether Lewis is killed at the log cabin.
The husband left.
Robert is gone to Texas. He runs away.
I didn't know that.
So this stand used to be called Indian Line Stand. And they had just opened it because the Chickasaw had seceded this land to Tennessee in 1805. And they had just established this stand in 1807. So it's only been around for 2 years. But Robert Grinder made his money by selling alcohol to the American Indians. That was his business there. Okay. So he's not like the most upstanding guy. You have to understand the Trace too is not a very lawful area.
Yeah. I mean, it's a wilderness path.
Yes. And so you're going to get highwaymen. You're going to get bandits because most people are traveling with some kind of means with them. And it's just like, think of Robin Hood. It's a very easy way to rob people because who are they going to get?
Right.
Right. You're along this middle of nowhere path. So Meriwether Lewis gets there before his enslaved men who are coming behind him with these four trunks, gets a room. He eats dinner. Priscilla and the children go to the other cabin and he's there. In the night or before the end of the night, the two men of color get there and they're put up in like a barn, like a lean-to that's a little bit away from the house. Not far,
but
because we've been there, if you want to see our video, it's probably where the parking lot is. So sure. It's not far.
Yeah, everything's pretty close.
Pretty close. And they're in there for the night. Well, about 2 o'clock in the middle of the night, two gunshots pretty close together go off. Now, Priscilla, like I said, there's three different stories that she gives. She gives a story right away when Neely gets there. The day later, Neely will get there after he's died. Neely will be the one who will be the eyewitness to, he'll hear Priscilla's first story. Her first story is she heard the two gunshots. She had her children go wake the servants, the two men. The two men went to Lewis. Lewis was distraught and he gave these great like last lines like, I am too strong to die. Dear Lord, take me. He was begging for water. They gave him water. He basically bled out and died.
Sure.
About 6 years later, she's interviewed again for a newspaper and she claims that Lewis came to her door after she heard the two gunshots, knocked on her door screaming and like moaning, asking for water. She was too afraid to give him water. She heard him scratching the gourd of the bucket at the well, trying to get water. And she's still too afraid to go out and give him water. He comes to her door again, knocking for water. Please help me get some water. He wanders around. They see him like fall down. He falls over a tree stump. He falls down.
That's a very different story.
And then she sends her two kids to go get the two servants. And then the two servants come and help him. And same thing. He's asking for water. They give him water and he dies. And then the end of her life, he was the night he was screaming and yelling. He was like talking to himself. It was almost like he was having a conversation with himself at dinner. And then he got very aggressive. He looked out the window and was like talking to someone, was very aggressive. And she asked him questions and he like just stared at her and she didn't understand what was happening. And he was just very like, someone's following me. Like he was very anxious.
Yeah.
And she wasn't sure what that was. And that's like the end of her life. She's telling this story.
Huh.
So three separate stories.
Yeah.
Even though she really is the only eyewitness. And then the family story is Robert Grinder. When Perna and Neely's servant find them, Lewis, in the room, he's conscious, but a piece of his forehead is blown away, exposing his brain. And it says without having bled much, which I find very hard to believe.
Yeah.
But he was wearing a buffalo skin robe, probably what he got from his expedition, because he probably gathered a lot of things. I bet the blood, you couldn't tell from the buffalo skin.
Yeah.
And he had uncovered the side where he showed the bullet had entered right under his chest. So when I say he was shot in the gut, like he was shot in the gut, like right under his chest. It was the second. And he begged them to take his rifle and blow out his brain. So he had asked them to finish the job. And in the return, he'd give him all the money he had in his trunk. He said, I'm no coward, but I'm so strong, so hard to die. He told Perna not to be afraid that he would not hurt him. But 2 hours later, he had died just as the sun rose above the trees. They said he died. Hmm. They kind of just let him die. He will bury him in the Pioneer Cemetery, which is right beside the cabin. If you see our video. Yeah,
it's like 50 yards away.
So Pioneer Cemetery, what are you talking about? When people take this Natchez Trace, think of it a lot like the Oregon Trail. Think of people are settling, right? They're moving their families and people will die along the trail because of disease and sickness. And it's very sad. Even when we looked at some of them that are marked, which I'm sure that is very few that are marked, but you see infants.
Yeah, I think we saw maybe a dozen.
Yes. You see a whole families.
Yeah.
You see it. So it very much is reminiscent of the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
Where people will get sick. It'll take out a whole family. You probably have different kind of massacres that are happening along the trace. I mean, this is still very volatile. White settlers, American Indians. And it's just a cemetery that was along the trace there. And so he's buried there in that cemetery. Neely wrote a letter to Jefferson saying that he decently buried him as I could in that place. And if there's anything else they'd like him to do, he waited instructions. So the only doctor to examine Lewis's body did not do so until 40 years later in 1848. The Tennessee State Commission, including Dr. Samuel Moore, was charged with locating Lewis's grave. So there was some guy who ran the cemetery who knew where Lewis's grave was. It's over here.
Yep.
And when they dug up the body, they verified that there was a gunshot to the head and to the gut. The commission wrote in its official report, even though the impression had long prevailed that Lewis died by his own hand, it seemed more probable he died by the hand of assassins.
Hmm.
And that's what opened up this whole idea that it wasn't suicide.
Well, and to be perfectly honest, just from a common sense perspective, it seems unlikely to me that someone would try to shoot themselves in the gut and then in the head. Right? Like he would do this himself. Like he would try twice.
Yeah. Well, they think he shot himself in the head first.
And then he tried to shoot himself.
Yeah. Which I think you'd be so delirious from a headshot.
Yeah.
I mean, your Maybe. Brain is exposed.
Sure. The whole thing is just strange.
So it just seems improbable. But because Jefferson and Clark, when they both hear of the suicide, and because of what had happened 2 weeks earlier with him trying to jump off the boat, and because they knew him to be melancholy at times and not good keeping up his correspondence, they weren't surprised by the suicide, the suicide theory.
Yeah.
And because of that, you get, like I said, famous historian Stephen Ambrose, who wrote Undaunted Courage about the whole Lewis and Clark expedition, who's not questioning the suicide.
Yeah, probability. It's just kind of universally accepted after that.
And because there could be a family component, and for me, there is one thing that kind of really is strong for me that it was more suicide than someone else, is that when Lewis sees the two servants, he doesn't say, someone shot me, right? He doesn't say this was someone else. Now, He doesn't say he was robbed, although no money is found that he had borrowed money when he went to Fort Pickering to make the trip.
Okay.
The money's gone. But there could be other people. Plus, there are other theories people have put forth. James Wilkinson, that was the governor of Louisiana that didn't like him very much, that was kind of following him, that he had paid someone to do it. And that's kind of what he was so kind of afraid about. Like, he knew someone was after him.
Okay.
And that he was more mad about the situation. So he's not going to be, it's like, someone shot me. He was more like, why can't I just die? So now there's other theories against the suicide, that he was not in his right state of mind.
Yeah.
And the theories for that are the malaria, mm-hmm, because of the opium. And syphilis has been put forth because, and Clark has a child with an American Indian woman while he's on the expedition.
Lewis?
No, Clark does.
Oh, Clark does.
So it's not far-fetched to think Lewis probably wasn't sleeping with American Indian women as well.
Yeah.
And you see there is evidence of Lewis looking up ways to cure syphilis.
Oh, really?
Ways to cure venereal disease.
Oh, wow.
And he was taking, I think it was mercury or tablets or something to help. But if everybody knows, stages of syphilis do involve mental delirium, because it does. It's a disease that affects your brain.
Yeah.
And so those are theories that family has put forth about his erratic behavior, about the way he was acting, about the melancholy, about all of these things where he's so good in some essences of his job as governor, and then he'll be so backwards and not communicate, and then he's so good again, and then he's so backwards, that he's having these issues with this mental health, and it's brought on by these illnesses. Now, the family has tried to exhume the grave, because if you can exhume the grave and get DNA samples, which would still be present in bone marrow, you can test for those things. Mm. And it could give some family some closure, or to try to make sense of these very few eyewitness stories that you have, which really one lady changing her story three times, and maybe putting together what's really going on with Lewis. I don't know if the family feels ashamed of the suicide. I don't know if that is the case, or they just want more answers. But the family has signed this petition, over 200 family members. Now, Lewis doesn't have any direct descendants because he never had any children. But he had sisters who had children. He has nieces and nephews.
Extended family.
And they're descendants of the Lewis family. So he does have...
I think we had someone comment on our video.
That they are a member.
That they were mm-hmm, related.
And there's like people in William and Mary are Lewis family members.
Oh, okay.
And so they're all on board with this. They would really love to have this body exhumed for testing. Now, this area, and we talked about it, is owned by the National Park Service.
Yep.
And the National Park Service does not do disinterments to test for any kind of historical evidence.
Yeah, I think you even said that it was one of those things, they just can't set that precedent.
They don't want to set the precedence. And then when you see our video, you see how sporadic these pioneer graves are. There really is no rhyme or reason to how they're buried. It looks very haphazard and scattered, as a pioneer cemetery would be.
Sure.
And so the National Park Service is concerned about disrupting other graves, which completely makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think Stephen Ambrose did a great job. I think because it probably was a secondary story to what he was telling, and he just kind of, because Thomas Jefferson and William Clark are not questioning the suicide, he just says that is accurate. Instead of what, there's other stuff, if you were just investigating the death, there's other stuff around the death that probably could use more of a lens to look through. Right. And as historians today have done more, a deeper dive into those things.
Oh, interesting.
And giving them more probability, which is only could be answered by...
So how did his journals and all that stuff... Finally, do they still make it to D.C.?
They still make it to D.C.
Neely took them.
So what's the aftermath here? Clark has a great life.
Yeah.
He lives to old age, has a bunch of kids, takes care of Sacagawea's son. He is very much a mean enslaver.
Oh.
Which is too bad that Lewis couldn't have been more to influence on him. Perna tries to go to Jefferson's house to get his $200. Turned away by Jefferson, ends up committing suicide. So what did he know? What did he not know?
Yeah, interesting.
Maybe he's just so destitute as well.
Did he actually commit suicide?
Yeah, did he actually commit suicide? His journals eventually make it to DC, and he is completely cleared of all wrongdoing.
So he was right all along.
He was right all along. All his debts are paid.
Yeah.
He was right all along. He's completely exonerated.
Jeez.
When they finally get his letters and get all of his stuff, they realize he has done nothing wrong.
Yeah, he's been doing his best out there.
He's been doing his best. Everything is documented, and he's completely exonerated and paid. So really, the name of Lewis as a leader holds tight today.
Sure.
As an influencer, holds tight today. It's just the end of his life.
Yeah, just kind of
has the big question mark.
Yeah, so much stuff going on, whether it's disease or mental or external circumstances. It sounds like those last couple of years were pretty tumultuous for him.
Yeah, and like I said, for a man that's so important to American history, so tied, everybody learns about the Lewis and Clark Expedition.
Yeah.
He's the first name in the Lewis and Clark Expedition.
Yep.
For his end of life to be such a question of American history, I just think it deserves some more answers.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. It was an interesting place to visit. It's a fun video to watch. So obviously that link will be in the show notes of this. But I would encourage you guys, about an hour outside of Nashville, if you want to go visit it. It's kind of out there if you want to go do some outdoorsy stuff, but it was pretty neat. Clark Expedition stands as a monumental achievement in American history, and Lewis's role in it should not be forgotten. Lewis, alongside William Clark, led the historic Corps of Discovery Expedition, forging a path westward and opening up vast new territories in the United States. He documented countless plant and animal species, meticulously mapped the unknown, and fostered relationships with Native American tribes. Though his final chapter remains a mystery, Lewis's legacy as a trailblazer is undeniable. But in the end, did Lewis succumb to his own demons, or was there more sinister plot at play? The answer, as we've seen, remains shrouded in mystery. Thank you for listening to the Talk With History podcast, and please reach out to us at our website, talkwithhistory.com. But more importantly, if you know someone else that might enjoy this podcast, please share it with them. Shoot them a text and tell them to look us up. We rely on you, our community, to grow, and we appreciate you all every day. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you. Hey, let me record this real fast. You can cut it in. Neely, so the guy who's traveling with Lewis, he continues for 3 more years as an agent to the Chickasaws, and then he's abruptly discharged by the Secretary of War for incompetence. And then he disappears from the pages of history.
Really?
Yeah.
Just poof.
Exactly.
Huh.
So all these kind of people surrounding.
This would make such an amazing movie.
Yeah.
You could totally just like kind of start from the tail end of the expedition and follow Lewis all the way through.
It's very interesting.
Huh.